previously on Getting the Mecha. I do think the OPs are only getting better from here. I don't think that... It's quite a hard one anyway. I don't think you can say that OPs are getting better or OPs are getting worse. However, I do think that 2019 has proven that anime and anime OPs are not going anywhere. Anime can do so much more, that there is so much more to anime at the moment, and things aren't slowing down. If anything, things are getting more creative. There is so much more anime and openings to be made. This is Getting the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Getting the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, we are united once again in our second annual Unskippable Openings episode. If you were here last year, and I commend you if you were, because that must have been a lot to sit through, but if you did make it from last year, then you know that I did a whole episode dedicated to just talking about the openings of that year, that being 2019, and in today's episode we will return to that for a second time and talk about the openings of 2020. This time I want to take a bit of a different side or slant to it though. In the last time we did it, I focused very much on just how much fun I had with it and everything. That's not a bad thing, but I want to focus things more on how they're animated and who worked on these things and what they can kind of tell us about anime really and what the OP represents. That is the core of the matter today. What does an OP represent? And I want to try and get to the bottom of that using some of these examples from the 2020 lineup we have today. That is episode 73 of Getting the Mecha, I do believe, Unskippable Openings 2020 edition. As always on the show, I like to provide you alerts being for spoilers in case you run into any, because I don't want to be the person being blamed for that. So for this episode, there shouldn't be any spoilers, to be honest. This will be, sure, I'll be literally referencing the OPs, but I'm not really going into an analysis of them. You'll kind of see how I'm targeting it as we get through the episode, but I want to really focus on this idea of what is an OP, not really what an OP is, but kind of what the function of it is, and with these examples we'll hopefully get somewhere within that discourse. As you can probably already tell through the thumbnail, as well as the thumbnail from almost 2 weeks ago, as well as even just throughout this podcast series in the past few weeks, I've been talking about this anime non-stop, and it's very predictable to know what my favorite opening is, and that has to be, I think, and fairly, Jujutsu Kaisen's first opening, directed by Shingo Yamashita. The song in this opening, and I should have mentioned that this episode will not contain music for obvious reasons. It's pretty difficult to put music in something like this because I'm probably going to get in trouble if I do. So no music in regards to the openings, unfortunately. I would have loved to do it, but you know, that's not how things work. But there will be analysis and there will be links to the songs as well. So if you do want to access the songs, I do have the YouTube links for all of them, or at least the OP anyway, they should be very easy to find on the most part. But the song for the first Jujutsu opening is Kakekitan by Eve. Eve is a great artist, by the way, has been doing so many cool things with animators as well, or at least the projects that Eve uses. Another artist, that is really proactive, it seems, when it comes to having animators specifically work on their videos is Zutomayo as well, but even Zutomayo seemed to be doing a really good job at that, which I really love, and they even had a recent example of that about a few days ago, so really good stuff. But to Kaikai Kitan, what I really love about the OP really is it's essentially a union of animators. Maybe we can be really technical about it, similarly to what we did on our lenses episode, and suggest that anime on a very technical level, we can define it as the interplay between layers. And yes, we can say the OP is also the interplay between layers, but I think another cool way and very specific way to define an OP, as well as just a project in general, most art projects which are collaborative within the industry are a union of animators, a union of staff working on one thing to sort of bring it together. As someone that follows the animation scene from the perspective of staff and all that, that's kind of where a lot of my interest lies at the moment. It's really cool when you see an animator sort of take off or evolve as you've seen their works and how they've managed to change and adapt and also try out new things as well. For me, I think everyone probably has an animator like this where they've seen just so much of their work and then they see them in a recent work and they're absolutely blown away and almost proud of the person or the animator because they've just come so far. And it might not even be animators, it could be writers, it could be creatives, it could be anyone really. But for me, this is Shingo Yamashita. If we skip back about 13 years, no, I was not at watching anime 13 years ago, but he was arguably the star of Tetsu and Buddy Decode, as well as Tetsu and Buddy Decode's second season, two of probably my favorite animated works from the perspective of production. I highly recommend them. Tetsu and Buddy Decode 1, season 1's okay, but season 2 really is something else, and I definitely do like recommend that. But Yamashita does a really good job of imparting, almost branding his style into my brain in this anime, and the reason for that really is just I had never really seen combat cuts like that before, and to this day I think that I don't think I'll ever really see combat that resembles that of Shingo Yamashita. He obviously has other influences from other places. I think Yutaka Nakamura is probably a vital part of that influence for Yamashita, at least in some of his earlier works anyway, but even so I don't think I'll really ever see something that resembles that of Yamashita. And the same applies to some of his further works as we go along, like his Naruto Shippuden cuts on Planetary Devastation. He even did a small bit on the Fate Grand Order 4th Anniversary PV. And basically what I'm trying to say is that Yamashita's an amazing animator, but I think that he does an awesome job as a director as well, as we can see within this opening. If we resume to the current day, that being 2020 and also some of 2019 as well, we've kind of reached a stage where Yamashita is a director. Yamashita has director credentials on his name. And although I don't really want to go down the rabbit hole, which I've gone down so many times already on this podcast lately, just talking about the animators who have worked on this opening, but I want to say that this opening really represents what I really like about animation being. Everyone manages to do things differently, and we can even see it within the OP. So there will be links to various scenes as well via Sakuburo and stuff. So if you do want to reference those, then they should be in the show notes, hopefully, if I remember. But if we take Wellen's Ang sequence or very short two cuts within the opening, they're very different to that of, say, Nakaya Onsen. Their focuses when it comes to how they manage form and stuff are completely different, but we have to remember that they're also part of a similar generation of animators, being this web generation that has really based a lot of their work and how they get a lot of work on the internet. And I think that I just really love seeing these animators do really well for themselves. Maybe it's just a me thing, but I like watching, maybe it's not just a me thing, but I like seeing people do well, at least when it comes to animation stuff, and seeing animators who you look back and you see their short films, which are also really good, but you see those and then you see what they're working on afterwards. It's simply stunning. And JJK's first opening represents exactly that, this beautiful union of animators who have all done insanely well coming together to make something that's even better. We are seeing some of these animators who we knew almost strictly as animators, we respected them as animators, but we're seeing them delve into directing a lot more. We see it with Ken Yamamoto as well, a very prominent name on that of Azure Lane, SSSS Gridman, even though he didn't have many cuts on that, but still a very important scene. Fate Grand Order Babylonia, very important in that too. So it's just seeing all these animators, which I love, really step up. And I do want to talk about this in our final episode of the year, which should be out in about 2 weeks. If not, I'll talk about it next week as well. But JJK's OP, I think, represents more than just what is there. It's more than just Jujutsu Kaisen, but it's animators that I'm not someone that really wants to get into animation personally, so I don't know if I can say looks up to, but at least when it comes to the craft and the dedication to the craft and their skill, I really do look up to these people, and seeing them do really well makes me really happy as well. I now want to talk about Fire Force's two openings. I didn't really introduce that very well, but I also might think that you guys saw this coming as well. Maybe I haven't been speaking about it as much as the Jujutsu Kaisen opening, but at least online, I've hyped up these openings quite a lot because I think they're really good, and they contain a lot of great stuff as well, which I kind of want to, not really dissect, but to kind of just point out and do a bit of a tour through. So the two openings, or at least the songs, are Spark Again by Aimer and Torch of Liberty by Kanabun. Similarly to the Jujutsu Kaisen opening, which we just discussed, I think there's a really cool thing that goes on. That's super vague, but I think there's something really cool that goes on when it comes to the animation stuff on this episode, or this OP rather. Spark Again is a great OP, and it comes from someone who I think, from what I've read, is very experienced when it comes to just working around the industry, and this is Naokatsu Suda. Very famous name in the sort of JoJo sphere of things. Unfortunately, I'm not in the JoJo sphere, so I do not know, but that name does hold a lot of weight from what I understand. And just to get into the actual OP, what I think is interesting about Spark Again is that it's probably the first opening in Fire Force to really hit hard on the narrative elements, or really showcase what this narrative is going to concern. Often we do have these very awesome sequences from these openings. Okay, maybe Mayday isn't the most well sequenced. It's not a bad opening. It sounds great. And bad isn't a term I really like to use for something like a song, but it's not a bad, quote unquote, bad opening by any means, but it's Mayday. At least it just doesn't feel very exciting beyond the song itself. There's nothing that is glaring out as typical bad, but at the same time, there isn't anything that is screaming good either, besides the song, that is. But in the case of Spark Again, this is finally bringing in narrative elements that we care about and teasing them together. The same thing happens with Torch of Liberty too. Every cut in the case of Spark Again flows really nicely, and my favorite being the concluding cut where Sho kind of jumps out from the explosion, which he manages to freeze time with, and then we have the whole sequence where we pull out and then Iris sort of falls down and then everyone's hands grab the stuff. I'll put the link in the description. But what I'm trying to say is just, I really find that cool. I just think that they really nailed getting the elements to work together, that it still interweaves the narrative into things, but it still creates a very awesome sequence that can go with it. I kind of got the feeling that there was a very mutual thing where it was, okay, we're going to include narrative, but nothing very of note, or we're going to include really well animated sequences and make a really interesting sequence, but it doesn't really have anything that is narrative related, and OP3 manages to strike the balance between the two. What is kind of cool about OP3 to me also, and this is going to sound like almost no point, or it's going to sound like an empty point, but it makes sense as I convert it into what we'll talk about afterwards, and that is because most of the main animators that you would expect are on Fire Force OP3. We have staff like Kazuhiro Miwa who have participated in many, many episodes of this show alongside Hiroyuki Okaji, who would also say it's probably around a similar count, has participated in a lot of episodes, very detailed in their drawing as well, which I really love. Yuki Sato, one of my personal favorites at the moment, she is amazing at what she does, and even how she's balancing or bouncing between multiple shows at the moment as well. I think that's worth a lot of credit. Obviously, scheduling and things factor into this. It might not be as transparent as working on three shows at the same time necessarily, but they're doing a lot and she's doing amazing. And then we have Riki Matsuda, who's worked very closely with Shaft Works, and we see that exactly through their work. But what I'm trying to say about this OP is that it is the probably most typical Fire Force image you can get. It is the core of Fire Force all working together, similarly to that of OP1. It is most of the core animators that really have worked very closely with this anime from the beginning, and they all managed to make this sequence work. It gets unusual when you remember that Fire Force Season 2 actually takes a lot of animators that haven't really been, I don't say they've never appeared on the production before, some of which haven't, but others who haven't maybe gone the same sort of light and recognition as these main animators which I've discussed, really bring it in the fourth OP, and we see an almost complete, and not complete, but almost a complete reshuffle of the animation staff in this opening. And I would also make the case for that being most of Fire Force Season 2 as well. But by the way, we have kind of transitioned into Torture of Liberty by Kanabun. And yes, Kanabun, the opening by Kanabun, one, sounds really great, and secondly, it's also animated really great. It takes a lot of visual differences to the other openings, being the red fire is the main thing, but I really do like that as well, and it also does a lot of other different things. It includes a lot of character acting, and it also acknowledges that it's a song. This is something which I was thinking about when I was writing the stuff up for this episode, basically a few minutes ago, and it's actually weird when you realize that there are a lot of openings out there that don't really, I don't say they don't care that it's a song, because it's what you want to create. There's nothing saying that you have to acknowledge that this is a bit of music, but it's really satisfying how Fire Force manages to acknowledge that this is an opening and this is a musical component of the anime. And so by including all this sort of performance based character acting throughout the OP, we have all these hand movements and very fancy gestures and things like that. It feels more intentional. This is something we speak about almost every other episode, intentionality. But I also think that it just adds to the mood overall, not just because it recognizes it, but it's the very execution of putting dance or performance upon a track that potentially should be for performance. And especially when we consider who these characters are who are dancing to this, it does scream a lot of trouble, but it also screams a lot of excitement as well. And it's cool to have that angle of a character too. It's like having the most major villain ever doing a break dance on screen, and maybe it's not to the same caliber as that, but it still is very enjoyable to watch. Torture of Liberty is one directed by a different person. It's not directed by Suda this time, but it's actually directed by Mamoru Kurosawa. I think it's also kind of cool how that generally Fire Force has taken a lot of changes, but those changes have only been good in my opinion. Whether that is the director change completely from Fire Force Season 1 to 2, from Yuki Yase to Minami Kawa, and even now with all these animators, I say Kunku switches, is not to say the main animators have gone or everyone one's left. No, I don't mean that, so no one twists my words. What I mean is that we're just seeing a different emphasis. We're seeing a change in the dynamic between the animators, and we're seeing animators that we didn't really see much of before work on this work a lot more. And I'm enjoying it a lot because we're getting, one, it's a learning experience. And I think another very niche way of describing an opening for someone that's really into animation is that it's a really good insight into how animators work in short time spans. By short time spans, I don't mean the schedule, I mean more of the actual opening itself. We see these small pockets of animation, whether that is Shinra flying to defeat a beast or some sort of fiery monster of some sort. Things like that where we can learn quite a lot from these animators by these small things. And I felt that quite a lot with 5-4 Season 1 as well, and more particularly the ending of 5-4 Season 1. I think it was the first half where we had Taiki Kono's work. You can reference that in my 5-4 Season 2, or no, 5-4 Animation Analysis episode where I spoke about that quite a lot. With good direction, we can really understand how animators really animate in an opening. Obviously, it depends on the OP and what is going on and the state of the production, but with what I assume to be, from at least the surface level only, a good production being Fire Force, it seems to be doing a really good job at creating a lot of variety and not really just sticking to this unified script of every animator must look the same. That being said, I think that there are a lot of animators on this project that are really good at emulating other animators, and I've gone this a lot. I'm not really going to go into a whole list of it, but a lot of the time when I'm trying to guess animators on a certain piece of work, I feel like they've really studied what other animators are doing on the project and have managed to emulate that really well, so it doesn't really feel like it's a glare out, or it doesn't feel like there's been a swap, basically. Or swap isn't the term, because they're not literally swapping each other out, but we still feel immersed within what we usually know as Fire Force, and OP4 manages to do a really similar thing with this. Now we come on to our final opening, and do not fear, this isn't the complete end of the episode, because we will have the In the Moment segment where I want to do a few honorable mentions and just scroll through a few more which I really like. But the main one which I want to discuss, and this shouldn't be too long, that is Fog Hill of the Five Elements OP1. And I just realized now, looking at my Google Doc, that I didn't take many notes, but this is going to be a quick one anyway. Fog Hill of the Five Elements is probably, alongside maybe All Saints Street, one of the least talked about anime of this year that has been insanely good. As you can tell, just like last episode, if you were listening, I'm avoiding saying underrated. I don't really like saying it, but I am saying it in a very nice way and a very formal way. The name of this OP is No Fear of the Deep Ocean, and it is by Lin Hoon. And just to make you aware, and kind of why we're gonna start bouncing off, is that Lin Hoon is the director for the series. So Lin Hoon sung this opening, and he also animates quite a lot on the series, and he also directed it as well. So Hoon is probably the most involved director I've ever come across in the anime space, and I just mean that out. Right, I don't really know someone that's that involved in their own anime, and that is partially because this is essentially, in very technical terms, an indie anime. It started off as, from what I understand, a solo project of Lin Hoon. It started off as a short film, and it evolved into a 3-episode OVA, or ONA, I don't know what to count it as. Recently, that was part one of Fog Hill, and it was amazing. And its OP is a fraction of that amazingness, all in the space of about 1 minute and 30 seconds. A lot of what I love about the series is incorporated within Hyun's OP. Again, there'll be links in the description and show notes for the episode. A lot of what I love about the series from a visual point of view is incorporated within the OP, so most of, if not the entire anime, is on a cinematic aspect ratio of 2:3:5:1, which I think is crazy, but it also looks very good, it justifies itself. The OP is also done in a similar fashion. Also, a lot of this, I want to call it ink emulation, where the designs, I'm assuming, are also Hyun's as well, are very sort of inky. They have strong outlines, and Hyun only works harder to make this even better by using a lot of these inky theme, I don't want to say inky themes, but this inky aesthetic that underpins a lot of the effects work within the anime, and also a lot of the stuff within the actual opening itself. So when we end the OP, we have this awesome calligraphy ink thing going on towards the end, which I really enjoy. And also the way it's smeared out as well, it still stays within the bounds of these sort of, again, inky outlines. Overall, 4 Kilo the Five Elements, I could talk about that anime for a whole episode, and I'm very tempted to do so in the future. I even have something prepared, potentially, to talk about, but at least for the opening, I think what is amazing about it is that it represents a triumph for indie anime, really. There are so many indie anime projects that are either short-lived or they're not very long, and there's nothing wrong with either of those. Those are also a triumph, but I think what Hun's project shows within the OP is that it's kind of a backwards point, but it's the idea that a lot of indie anime projects are probably as short as the OP of 4Kyo the Five Elements, and then you realize that there's a whole anime around this, and I just think having the person singing the song who's also directing the anime as well, it just shows how talented some people are within this industry. And that's kind of leading us into a point I kind of want to round up on what an OP represents. And maybe it's a bit of a very maybe meta or just a really stretched out point, but I think an OP can do a lot for us, and it's not only from the perspective of storytelling and what it shows us, but also who's included within it, and stuff like Fog Hill just show that anything is possible within this meta, anything can be done within animation as a medium, I think, personally. Yes, there are limits to what someone can draw, I agree, but at the same time, I think Fog Hill just really gives me a lot of hope that this anime, this meta, or just anime as a whole can do a lot. And the OP in itself is only a sort of microcosm of the entire anime, if you are to check it out. This anime is on another level, and I can't comprehend how much you should watch this three-part OVA from the perspective of animation, but it's also a pretty good narrative as well. And yes, one of the best of 2020, honestly. And I think also an OP which isn't going to be mentioned very much by people when it comes to their favorite OPs of the year, which is totally fine. But I just want to make sure that this one doesn't go under the rug. And so that is the analysis for this week, or at least that is the first part. We will do a bit more, or just a bit more discussion in the moment segment, where I just want to go through some of the ones which I didn't manage to mention in this main segment of the show. And I probably won't go as deep into, oh, what does this represent? Because sometimes you just want to talk about the OP in her and just have a bit of fun with it. So I'm going to be doing that. So without further ado, let's go to the In The Moment segment for this week and talk a bit more about anime openings. Usually on the In The Moment segment, I'm here to talk to you about what I've been watching or reading lately, or even so, we might even do voice subs sometimes. And there are voice subs this week, which is also totally fine, but that gives us a good opportunity to talk about these other openings too, which I have really enjoyed. And some which are probably a bit more unpopular, or at least, okay, my taste in some of them might be unpopular relative to what other people think of them, and others are genuinely just not very spoken about. So I have about 3 openings on this short list. Yeah, the kind of the ones that got shortlisted but didn't really manage to get in. I have 3 of these, and yeah, let's discuss. I also should clarify that I did want to put a lot more OPs in this episode, but I realized that because of time, this would be insanely long and also not very fun as well if I was to continue rambling about these openings for too long. So I would rather give you the few that I'm very passionate about rather than give you 10 that I'm kind of feeling okay-ish about, and it just wouldn't be very fun, I think, for the listener. So yes, there would have been more. There would have been Isaacan. I'm just saying it now. There would have been Isaacan. There would have been Gleipnir. There would have been It Invaded. There would have been the Sword Art Online ones. There would have been a lot of things. And yeah, it's not that I don't like them. They could have made this list, but I was just thinking what would be the best for time and also what would be more interesting to talk about. That being said, we have a very interesting OP here, and that is the Gao and Dino OP. And I have to give a very special thank you to Rel on Twitter, because I was made aware of this a few days ago, and it really blew my mind, actually, that this kind of went over my head. The Gao and Dino OP, and yes, there will be a link, Funimation did upload it onto their YouTube account, so I'll be linking that. The Galen Dino-P really goes above and beyond. It consists of a lot of stop motion and also a lot of realistic elements as well. These are two things which I'm a really big fan of. I'm a very big fan of real life photography within anime, depending on how it's used, but a lot of the time I am. Like, there was a recent short film which I watched, which was False Memory by Shuyu Lee. Very good director at the moment in the anime space, into the indie anime space. And the finale of the film uses a heck of a lot of it, but it works really well. And I can't tell you how awesome it can be when it's pulled off well. And in the case of the Galen Dino-P, I think that this is the very same thing. I can also really get behind it because of how many different shots there are within this. Because of the real life photography and stuff, it varies a lot between these different settings, and no two settings really feels the same. Whether we have a realistic version of the girl and the dino within her like front pocket, or whether we have the dino within a bunch of makeup, or whether we have the dino in an animated setting or just a stock normal setting. There are so many of these and they're all cut together, and it isn't really about how well animated it is, because though that sequence there isn't very animated, but is how it's edited. And editing does need a lot of maybe attention when it comes to the discourse of anime and anime production, or at least like anime analysis and film analysis, something which I'd be happy to do. But for now, I can just say it's edited really well in a way that I really was engaged by. It really shows you how much work they put into it and how creative they were willing to get, and it stands out for sure. And so I definitely do recommend the Gao and Dino OP. Second one for this segment is Tower of God OP, and I'm probably the minority for this opinion, and I really like it from both the audio and visual perspective. And just to say for the audio perspective, that is Top by Stray Kids. I don't think people really dislike the song. It's really how, again, it's cut together. Not the song, the OP itself, the video. They don't really like how that's cut together. And I kind of do. I think for it being the first anime in the webtoon sort of wave of anime, I think it works pretty well for it. How it shows these credits that these are sort of the people on the front line, and I know that's not really its intention. I also do read the manhwa, or I've read quite a lot of the manhwa. I'm way past this part in it, so I do know what I'm talking about to an extent, even though I know that that isn't the case. But what it really does, or from what I understand, it represents or replicates the zeroth chapter of the manhwa, being this whole thing on why you're entering the tower. So it's like, well, wealth, ambition, power, influence, fulfillment, those aren't actual lines, but those are things that are obviously come to one's head when you're thinking about climbing a tower. And I think the OP does a good job of representing that, even if it doesn't explicitly show it. It just works with the paneling, or not the paneling, but how that chapter is laid out, and I do respect that if it is a reference to it. If it's not, then I think it works okay. I don't think it's the best execution ever, but I still do think it deserves a lot of credit in regards to color design and the imagery that it brings across. I do like how it manages to toy with BAM quite a lot, and it only uses BAM mostly in the OP, which I like also. And our final opening for this episode is the Great Pretender opening. You thought it wasn't going to come, but it did come. I haven't really spoken about Great Pretender on the podcast before, I don't think. Mostly because, I don't want to say no one's been speaking about it, but that could obviously be an opportunity. But I would rather speak about some other things for now, maybe cover the Great Pretender arcs at another time. But Great Pretender is a really good anime, one of the best of this year in my opinion. And its OP is also one of the best of this year, in my opinion. Where it stands out is the fact that it is non-lyrical. There aren't any lyrics behind it. No one's singing in the OP. And I do like that. It does set a really interesting tone for the episodes. The song being GP by Yutaka Yamada. I'll be completely honest and say I don't really know much about Yamada in this context. But that being said, it's just a really great way to start an episode. It's full of thrill. And when I was watching this for the first time, because the best way to watch Great Pretender contender, in my opinion, is to watch it in its arcs itself and how it was released. Netflix probably did a good job releasing these episodes for once, whereas usually Netflix for a 12 episode series, even the Great Pretender isn't 12, they'll drop about 6 episodes or 4 episodes or something, and then they'll roll out the rest later. And Great Pretender managed, at least on the Japanese Netflix, it managed to come out in arcs, so it'll be 4 episodes a week. I think that was a very good way of releasing it. It really sets the tone for just getting into a whole arc from the beginning. Obviously, if you're listening to it 4 times, you might not enjoy that. I do, though, because I really enjoy the OP. And it's really well sequenced as well. Obviously, from the way I'm speaking about it, I can't remember everything about it in regards to how it's sequenced. But it's super enjoyable and just sets a really good tone. I also think that it's kind of good that they didn't use any lyrics, partially because of how the anime technically is in English, or they're speaking English when they're in those sorts of places, when they're in America, when they're in the UK. From what I understand, they are speaking English, but it's in Japanese for the sake of it being an anime. Similarly to how the show actually begins in English, so Makoto and Laurent having that chat, and then they just say, "We're switching to Japanese for the sake of ease." These con people, they blend in with different cultures and different ways of life in order to achieve a certain end. Putting a language there, even though I don't know if that was the intention, but putting a language there I think would maybe defeat the purpose a bit. It's pretty international when it comes to what it explores. It explores London, LA, Singapore, and the rest of it, so I do enjoy that choice, and if it was intentional, then credit to whoever thought that up, and if it wasn't intentional, then you came up with something good anyway. So that is the In The Moment segment, and that is most of the episode done for this week. Thank you for tuning in to this In The Moment segment if you wanted some extras. I have to thank you specifically if you did manage to come here from last year. If you have been listening to the podcast literally for a year, I can't thank you enough, so thank you very much, and let's go to closing thoughts and talk about openings, really, and kind of just tie together what an OP represents. On Get in the Mecha, we talk a lot about representations. Representations as in what something connotes. When we're analyzing narrative, we speak a lot about what this thing is presenting to us, what we understand from it. That is kind of the very basis of literary analysis, really, and anime analysis, in this case, or film analysis. We start from signs, and then from signs, we take what we can understand from signs, and we convert those into sort of emotional things, or philosophical things, we go from there. But in the case of openings, we often do take this route of, okay, what do the signs represent, da da da, but when we think about it from the perspective of the industry and from the perspective of animation staff and everything, it's a really different story. And I think what an OP represents a lot of the time, in the case of the ones from 2020, is a union of animators. Union not in its societal context as in unionizing, even though I would love if animators could unionize in the climate to which the industry is in. But when I say union, I just mean a collection of animators coming together. And this can help us understand animation a lot more, I think. I did make an MAD recently on Twitter, I do recommend it, but it's besides the point of really the MAD itself, but it's having animation to music, and that can do wonders for us, because we have all these shortcuts, and because we have all these more fragmented ways of consuming the animation in itself, we can get to understand animators in a different light, and we can also see a lot of different animators come together, hence the reason for JJK OP1 and Fire Force OP3 and 4. I think it just shows the importance of artists coming together, but also what an artist can do on their own and what we can get from an artist doing on their own. In summary, the OPs of 2020 have been awesome, and I've also learned a lot from them too. Thank you for listening to this episode of Guest on the Mecca. Hopefully it does get to you on time, but that has been episode 73 of the podcast. We are 27 episodes out of 100. I'm not going to do a countdown, but it would be kind of cool if we did. But yeah, episode 73, thank you for listening. This is my first time doing it in this setup. It probably doesn't sound any different, but it's a new experience, and I'm willing to do this for the next few weeks. But I don't know why I said that, honestly. Let's just get out of here. Thank you for listening. I have been your host, Jamal, today. Have a great week. Have a great day. The holidays are here, finally, almost. And this has been Guest in the Mecca. The music in this production goes as follows: 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Difference by Chasers Gaming, and Anomaly, Barrack Media's UnderSoundImage.org.